Every entrepreneur has been there. Growing pains obstacles make you stronger. Gains.
It's the challenges that cause us to level up.
I'm your host, Alicia Dominico.
Sometimes you can be surprised, and sometimes unpleasantly surprised, when you see like, oh, I thought people would be interested in this. I thought that this would fill a gap, but it actually doesn't. Sometimes you just need to call your battles and move on and focus on other places where you can really provide value.
Websites are a critical tool for business. You still need to have a home on the internet where potential customers can find you and learn about your product. What's next after websites? We don't know yet, but right now you still need one. Unfortunately, most websites aren't doing the heavy lifting that they should be. They're either not attracting enough traffic, or they're attracting lots of traffic, but the numbers aren't converting to sales. If either of those situations sound familiar, your website probably needs to be overhauled. I know, doing websites are hard. There are a million design choices and pieces of content to write, and it costs a lot of money. Plus, there's the expense of your time to sit down and focus on it for the next 3 months. But if the overhaul is done right, you'll be glad you did it, because you'll also get tracking out of the process. So then next time, the lift shouldn't be as heavy because you'll be able to directly fix what's not working. In this episode, we're going to cover two angles of how to fix your website. First, we'll offer some advice if you need to rebuild and redesign everything from scratch. Things like when to engage your team, how long it should take. Second, we'll get into the nuts and bolts of how to attract quality traffic and how to convert visitors into customers. With help from one of my staffers here at Tangible Words, we'll cover SEO, landing pages, conversion points, and all that stuff. Let's get into it. This episode of the Company Growth Podcast is sponsored by Answer Connect. Answer Connect is a 24/7 live call answering service that ensures your customers get the answers they need from a real human voice. Did you know that 80% of people will end a call if they reach voicemail? Answering all those calls could be the difference between gaining a client or losing a customer. When you're busy, you don't have time to answer all those calls, but revenue could be slipping through your fingers. Think of this as amazing for people like plumbers who are out there on the road and they don't really have time to answer and schedule the next appointment. So that's where Answer Connect is an amazing use case. Partner with Answer Connect and you'll have access to 24/7 customer support specialists. So even in the event of an emergency, you have people ready to help your callers when they need you. Visit answerconnect.com/CA to find out more. Here's the thing you need to know about redesigning your website. It's a team sport. You're going to have a developer with technical know-how. You're going to have marketing writing the copy. You're going to have sales weighing in on what they need for their customers to be able to visit and their leads to be able to become interested. You're going to need the leadership refereeing because all the players are going to have conflicting ideas and ways of executing them. Yes, the process is going to be messy at times, but I promise that the final product, the website, will be messier if you don't involve everybody from the start. One of the reasons to get everyone involved early is because you can't design a website in silos. If you try, you can easily end up with a beautiful design that then gets broken by the content being too long. And if you just start with the content, then you make sacrifices for the design, and the design feels a little less inspired than it should be to really hit the joint venture of communication and design, actually helping each other to get the message across and let the penny drop. So the design and the content need to be equally prioritized and balanced before you start the redevelopment process. We spend time looking at the strategy of the website and all the teams getting involved to align to what the strategy is. And then we also think about how the content and the design need to be planned together, those teams very closely connected, before you actually bring in the developer. But you can't forget about the developer because you need to know what's going to be possible in the development to make sure that you're not blowing things out of scope. So really bringing in all three of those teams at the start of the strategy of what you want to achieve is a very effective method. There's a good chance your redesign will be led by an external web development company because in your day-to-day, doing a project like this is too big of a lift with all the other responsibilities most people have. The external capacity and expertise of an external web development company are great, but hiring one brings some challenges and risks too. One thing that should be easy to avoid is what happens if your web development company gets busy. if they allotted a certain amount of time for you to finish the website and you slip and miss your goals, are they going to be able to recover and still support you? It's a question to ask. And set realistic expectations. Yeah, you can rebuild the website in 2 weeks if you don't mind doing garbage in, garbage out. But if you want to have a website that is better than the one that you just had in terms of layout, in terms of search engine optimization, in terms of content working with the design and the design working with the development, you should plan to have 3 months be the minimum amount of time that it takes. 5 months seems to be the norm. But if someone's telling you that it's going to take a year, I would definitely stop and ask questions. And if you find that your team that you've hired is taking longer than 5 months, it's probably a good idea to pump the brakes and find out what is going wrong before it stretches into 6 months. But generally, most web development firms get it done in 3 to 5 months, and the only delays that actually happen are on the customer's side. So what can you be doing as the customer to be organized? We found that having weekly meetings is really impactful for making sure that the decisions that have to get made every week. So make sure that your team shows up to those meetings and that you're having those internal meetings that maybe you don't want to have with another firm behind the scenes, that those are getting scheduled too. So if there's any political or awkward or who are we existential crisis moments, that you can get those out of the way so that you don't slow down the firm that you've hired. All right, now let's get into the nuts and bolts. Since there's a lot to cover, I recruited a member of the Tangible Words team who spends her time in the trenches of this stuff.
Hey, everybody. My name is Charlie. I'm a growth strategy manager at Tangible Words, and I have been with the company for about a year and a half. Loving it.
Yay, Charlie. Charlie, I think I want to be real for a minute. As an agency who is traditionally in the marketing world, and of course we bridge that gap and we work in customer service departments, we work in sales departments, as well as marketing departments. Over the years, we've transformed to give that support that our clients need. And of course, HubSpot tools have grown. So we've grown with it to provide the support for those hubs that HubSpot sells licenses for. But along the way, we were like, do we have to do websites anymore? Is that going to be important for us? And we stopped doing them for a while because nobody wants to do another website project. It is really such a painful experience because it takes so long.
Yeah.
You don't want to do garbage in, garbage out. There's so many decision makers and decisions to make along the way, yet it is still the shopfront of your organization. And along the way, what we've realized is that it's a very formative experience for companies, that they have to make decisions about their brand and how their brand has changed. So it is excruciating from the point of view of time. And now we all have to get consensus on how we're going to talk about our brand. And that is actually hard for companies, especially with people who have, you know, competing priorities, as everybody does in a business, particularly, you know, in small business markets. So I think that websites are excruciating. Since you've come on board, Charlie, we've tried to make websites much more fun for everybody involved. So do you want to talk a little bit about how we deliver websites now and how are we making it better?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head in terms of there's a lot of people that need to get involved and there's a lot of decisions that need to be made before you can even get to that starting lineup of making the website actually happen. And so a big part of our process for that is having a lot of time where we're building up, like, what is your brand guideline? Who is your persona? Who is this website for? What are we representing? So we really go into those conversations with every client that we work with so that by the time we actually get to the design and development, we have that really set. And I think that that helps the clients with figuring out who they are. It helps us in understanding who they are. And it makes the whole website process a lot easier. That said, obviously, it's still going to be a difficult process because you are creating your storefront, you're creating something through which you're going to have everyone come to you and understand you through. And that's hard. But yeah, doing it together and like with our team who have done like a bunch of website projects at this point, we've greased the wheels, we've figured it out in a lot of ways. And we're still always working to improve that process and get better.
One of the things that we do really well at Tangible Words is create systems. One of our goals for our clients is for them to experience scalability with their processes, mm-hmm. their revenue operations, with hiring their staff and onboarding their staff, with keeping their customers, retaining their customers. It's a really big part of revenue operations. And I think we have developed a website process that allows us to really systematize how to facilitate approval processes within a company that may be struggling to get consensus on what key terms should lead this ideal prospect to find us. And that's the, like, when we talk about this episode being about attracting quality traffic, there are two things there. One, you're trying to use your website to attract traffic, and two, you want it to be the right kinds of traffic, that the people that you're actually targeting. Do you want to talk about some of the things that we do to make sure that we're getting the quality as well as the traffic?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, we get into the whole keyword strategy around building websites. And when you're developing that list and that strategy, just plucking keywords out that are somewhat related to your brand or your product, but maybe like the intentions behind searching those keywords up has nothing to do with making a purchase or actually considering what it would be like to engage with your product. Those are the kind of things that we think about when we're developing your strategy, because it doesn't make sense to just throw any related keyword in there and hope for the best. It's a really strategic process, and we work through it with our clients, because often they're providing the best kind of insights. Even though they may not be able to identify them in the beginning, we're here to identify them alongside them.
And I have found that really interesting, because, you know, we've heavily invested in our team understanding and in our licensing with SEMrush. Mm-hmm. And, you know, HubSpot actually uses SEMrush data too. And if you're a HubSpot user, you have access to SEMrush whenever you search for a keyword. But we've really refined our process for identifying those keywords, because we often say to our clients, like, the keyword research part can take you down the wrong rabbit hole really, really quickly. Do you want to speak about, like, the rabbit holes that can happen when you're trying to create your website strategy, like how going off on a tangent or the wrong search term can be so disruptive, and maybe also like why a tool like SEMrush or SEMrush is so important to have alongside instead of just relying on the HubSpot version of SEMrush?
Yeah, for sure. Like, a tool like SEMrush can really allow you to get into the nitty-gritty details. Like, you can look at your competitors and see what people are searching up when they're looking for your competitors. And going into that data, you can often fall into a bit of a rabbit hole. Like, SEMrush offers so much data that it can be kind of difficult to sift through and figure out what's actually important to you and your product uniquely. But yeah, getting into competitor research, figuring out like how people are searching, what their intentions are behind the search, those are all really important things for when you're trying to figure out how people are going to find you. And just in general, like, the whole point is that you're trying to be of value to the people searching you up. So you don't want to waste their time by like, and mess with your own analytics by having somebody who was never going to purchase be on your site.
And I think HubSpot offers a lot of value in terms of the way that you can identify who's on your site and what you know about them and what pages they're visiting. But, mm-hmm. you know, some of the, like, we always try to say in entrepreneurship, fail faster, because we learn by making mistakes. And I think one of the things that we're really strong at, and you've been a big part of this, is documenting our process, debriefing with the team, what worked, what didn't go well, laying track for improvement is one of our core values at Tangible Words. So I think we've done a really good job there. But what I have found with SEMrush is that certainly in the English language, there's just so many synonyms, particularly as you go into the world of key phrases. There's so many different ways to say something. And some of the ugly kind of potholes that you hit or rabbit holes that you will hit in SEO research is that you started out with the wrong term and you went out and did all this research and found 50 words that could totally work, but they're off because the core concept was off. And so... Yep. In our first month of that website strategy that we work on, where we're really trying to identify what quality means and what traffic would look like, we spend a lot of time doing persona work, which at the end, buyer's journey research and mapping out what kinds of things they might need to know at each stage so that we can find key terms for each stage of the journey.
Yeah. And having like your website be a source of information, like understanding both what questions are being asked and how you can best answer them through having high quality content on your site. Both of those are aspects of a keyword strategy that can really work in your favor.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, one of the other things I think about traffic is that we have a pretty interesting formula that we've devised, like we've been using at Tangible Words. I won't say we definitely didn't create this, but we have found it. Megan helped lead this for us on the team. She was on the podcast this season. One of the things that I think is really interesting is how we try to identify traffic goals. Do you want to speak into how we set goals for traffic for websites? And we use this also for our blog formula in terms of what content we're going to be researching. So what are some of the metrics that the team is looking at? How do we identify better terms to use?
Right. Like, we're looking for search volume, search intent, and we're creating these like extensive spreadsheets that are easier to see than to explain, but basically which calculate the potential traffic that could come to your site. So generally, we're looking into all of those factors, considering them when we're building your spreadsheet, and as well as like a paid media strategy that we sometimes go into, where we're figuring out what really strikes people and what doesn't. There are lots of avenues to get there, and it's a difficult process, but working through it with our clients and with our team members who specialize in this kind of strategy is how we get there and how we build websites that are really answering the questions that your leads are asking.
Let's talk about a myth that you and I have experienced a lot of times together. So you hire this great company, Tangible Words, they talk a good game, they've got this great process, they make everybody feel involved so that, you know, certain key decision makers don't hate the website within 6 months. That's something that we can pretty much promise that we deliver on. And we do all this SEO research and we're supposed to be really good at it. We launch the site. Is that it? Is that all you need to do for your SEO strategy?
Definitely not. SEO strategies are never done, unfortunately. It'd be nice if they could be, but they're just constantly a work in process. So we can set up, and generally what we do set up is a very good structure, but you have to continue working at that and continue updating your keywords. An example of that is we have a client who works in the AI field, and then when ChatGPT came out, all of the keywords around that changed. So staying updated with trends and also just like lasting new products in the industry, those are super important for always keeping your keyword strategy updated.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even if we give you that good structure. It's a little bit of this SEO rabbit hole that we were speaking into. You can have the best laid plans to be like, yes, this is the term. It's going to give us this much more traffic. It totally fits within this persona. We've mapped out the buyer's journey. We think this is how they will search for you and be happy that they found you on search engines. And then there's the moment we were wrong, right? Which can totally happen because you're not sitting there in the chair with how people are searching for you. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of analytics and what kinds of analytics people should be looking at to monitor their ongoing success? Like, what are the tools you like for seeing if it worked?
I mean, Google Analytics is great for this and seeing which pages people are most attracted to, what blogs are people spending the most time on, like figuring out where your quality content is and seeing how people react to that is really important and can often direct you to the keywords that you were like, oh, I didn't know people would be super interested in this, or I didn't know this would be super helpful to people. So having a good eye on those kind of things can really help you. And sometimes you can be surprised and sometimes unpleasantly surprised when you see like, oh, I thought people would be interested in this. I thought that this would fill a gap, but it actually doesn't. And that gap is being filled somewhere else. And sometimes it's not worth the effort to try to fill that gap. So like sometimes you just need to call your battles and move on and focus on other places where you can really provide value.
Yeah. And I think you can be in the top five positions on what would they call SERP ranking, so search engine ranking and position. And so that SERP could be top five, but they're students. Let's say you're not targeting students and it's students who are coming to research on your website. Not super helpful, not going to help your buyer's journey. So I think when you set out to do your website, it's very important to understand your benchmarks of what you're getting right now. And you can say, oh, we really want to decrease page bounce. And then 3 months later after launch, you're like, oh my God, we didn't do that. But what do we do now? I think that's why it's so important to have something like a content management system, a CMS like HubSpot, where a lay person can, or a marketing person, not a developer, can get in there and make adjustments. Like we would look at traffic analytics on HubSpot, right? We would look at where sources or people are coming from. If we saw on other accounts, we've been able to see like, hey, we did this big SEO cleanup of our key pages and we saw organic traffic increase that month significantly or the month after, you know, which would make sense because there is a sandbox where you may make a change today and not notice it tomorrow because it could take, you know, up to 60 days for it to be indexed. I've heard up to 90 days, anywhere between 30 to 90 days. That's why we always tell people, if you're trying to promote an event and you're hoping people will find it by search, should have done it 100 days ago. To make sure that you are actually benefiting from search. Like doing it today and hoping it's going to appear in search engine results tomorrow is unrealistic.
Yeah, totally. And I think having a good understanding also of like figuring out who your persona is, looking at those demographic analytics, like maybe your persona is changing or maybe the wrong people are looking you up, just like you said. So really having a good handle on who your target audience is, and like always working for that, I think can also be super important and can indicate where you think you're going wrong.
And I think a lot of the time people get confused about different softwares and when they need which one. So maybe it would be helpful if we could kind of talk about, like, there's Google Analytics, which you've mentioned, but some of the things that you just said right now really reflect on Google Search Console. Like, I didn't know that would be helpful. I didn't know people were finding me by this term. We tend to think of that as more of a Google Search Console use, to be like, these are the terms they're finding us by. Is that right?
Yeah, like Google Search Console, like, helps you measure like search traffic and performance, and like, yeah, different analytics and to do with who is looking for you and who's on your site. Whereas Google Analytics itself is better for like the stats that are coming in about your site in general, and less about the users. And then, yeah, using other softwares like Semrush, that can also give you a good indication of your demographics and where people are attracted to on your site, but it's a bit more reading between the lines to figure that out. I think Google Search Console and Google Analytics is really built for anyone to kind of go through and look at the analytics there, and you'll come away with a solid understanding regardless of your background.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think usage-wise, they both take learning. Like, not one is easier to learn than the other. They all take a lot of investigation, and they're kind of the thing that was built by engineers, not necessarily people who, you know, find it easy to navigate computers. People who are really good at understanding databases have built these things. So, and that's because they're so granular and strong. But I also think it may be challenging to interpret. So I like to think of SEMrush as your perspective tool, because SEMrush tells you this, but they are just a database. They're not actually the exact data of what is happening on your site. Google Search Console will tell you a little bit about the search terms that they're using to get to you so that you can have some of those aha moments. Whereas Google Analytics is your single source of truth of what's happening, bounce rate, page views, all of that actual interactivity on your site. And SEMrush is a little bit more perspective in the sense that like, what can we imagine would be useful? Okay, in what has happened in the past, we could project that this search term would probably be a good one that has really high search volume and low competition, and you could stake your claim there. But as you have already said, as soon as a new competitor comes in or a new product, everything that you'd already done infrastructure-wise does need to be considered. And that's why tracking these things on your website to really understand what's happening with your traffic and being in a nice athletic position to actually respond to what you're noticing is critical importance to getting that traffic to coming to your site. I want to take a moment to also describe that there's different kinds of traffic. So when we define traffic, we're actually talking about search can be traffic, right? Like, there's organic search traffic, there's paid search traffic. So you're boosting things on search engines. Mm-hmm. Traffic also comes from social media. And one of the things that we're always advising our clients to do is to really have social media traffic. Traffic also comes from paid social traffic. So there's organic and paid on social too. And these are really dissemination services to bring traffic back to your main website. And a lot of people kind of forget the importance of using these tools to bring people back to your brand, where you can track the interaction at that level of page view, page bounce rate, all of those kinds of things. You know, HubSpot is another tool that will pick up your Google Analytics, your Google Search Console. It integrates with SEMrush, and it aims to be this all-in-one place where you can analyze everything that's happening and where those referral sources of traffic are coming from.
Yeah.
And then another type of traffic tool that I think people forget about is email as a source for traffic. So a lot of people will write a very long email. We had Megan on from Tangible Words to discuss this in this season as well, talking about email traffic. But having a link inside of your email is a very important way to driving traffic back to your site too, because they're engaging with the email. But if all the content just lives on the email, it doesn't make your website sticky and it doesn't drive traffic back to those places where you may have call to actions or places where you can see their level of engagement and interest.
Totally.
So SEO is a huge part of attracting traffic. And with constant SEO changes emerging, it can make you feel like you're missing the thing that would make your SEO successful. Are there any SEO challenges that you're utilizing or feeling challenged by? I want to know about how you deal with those challenges or what some of the things you're noticing in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we've already discussed, SEO is a very dynamic field, and staying ahead of the curve is challenging and something you always have to be up on. But one, I guess, notable SEO challenge that we have been overcoming and working with at Tangible Words is local search optimization. For instance, like one of our clients, a Canadian business, wanted to stand out from competitors in their city, and their website wasn't ranking that well for local searches. So it made it difficult for local customers in their area to find them online. So originally the SEO strategy that we built for them, it really focused on their business in the States. It focused on their business in Canada, like Canada-wide, because they have several headquarters. But that meant that we kind of missed out on appealing to leads closer to home. So to fix that, we used SEMrush to create an SEO strategy that was focused on local searches, and we optimized their Google business listings so that when people looked them up on Google, it was right there with their home address, not home address, business address. And so that really like encouraged people to find them in the local area and made them stand out from the other competitors that were in that area. And part of our like longer term strategy with that also like includes location specific content. So that's blog posting, emails.
Even landing pages. I think we had like specific landing pages focused on that location.
Exactly. And like eventually high quality local backlinks. So yeah, that just improves their local search visibility, improves business closer to home. And that's something we're definitely taking with us into our other clients' work and something that we want to improve on in general.
And we're living in a world where we're flooded with information and everyone can promise us almost anything. So what is one marketing strategy you consider almost foolproof when it comes to attracting quality traffic? Would you say it's SEO?
I would say it's SEO, but I would also say it's in combination with content marketing. Like people often underestimate, you know, blog is dead, no one wants to read anymore, all of these things. But at the end of the day, if you can provide quality information, whether that's through a very short blog or through a video blog or through something like a podcast, creating valuable, informative information is never going to get old because people are always going to be looking for it. So yeah, just by providing content that solves problems in combination with SEO, so you're figuring out exactly what they're looking for and how to answer that question, that's something that's always going to attract traffic, it's always going to provide value, and it's something that's never going to get old.
And I think in terms of like saying it's foolproof, SEO is definitely not foolproof. Like
100%.
It is a challenging slope. I think the only thing that is foolproof is actually tracking. Because you don't really, we still don't know what's going to work. We still have way more channels than we ever did now that we have the age of the internet. It's like we're living it for the last, 20 years. content isn't really going away, but you now have to have multi-format forms of contact. You now have, like, we have a podcast. We still run our blog. We have landing pages. We have social media. Like, all of these things now are happening, and it's a lot for companies to manage. And we don't necessarily say that they have to have all of those formats, especially if their customers aren't there. But it is helpful to really think about which channels you are going to do. And even if you need to start small, you need tracking on that channel. Yeah. So if you're like, we're just going to do the podcast, we're just going to see how this performs, these are going to be our core metrics, these are the places we're going to measure it, fine, good on you. Like, just do that. But you still need to have, the only foolproof thing here is going to be the tracking of how it actually performed. Because as an agency who does this and is very successful, we're an award-winning agency, but we're not always getting it right either. There's a lot of things that we just rely on the tracking of how it actually performed, so that you cannot scrap the whole thing, but make improvements to it. And I think that's a really, really key part there.
Totally. You know, you don't want to have anything be wasted. An SEO strategy that's often overlooked is reusing old content and updating it. Like, if something once provided value, you can kind of shift it to continue to provide that value. You don't need to scrap your best laid plans and start all over again. And so that's something that we really try to emphasize as well. Just by building up your content and building up what you already have, you have a lot of good stuff in there generally.
Yeah, and I think so often, and especially because it's been come with CMSs, content management systems, it's become so easy to create content. We're always like, new, let's make new. And I remember, like, the days of 2017 at Tangible Words, we were of that same ilk. But while you were skating hard and fast to get the content out there so that you could target those search terms, we've since learned you don't need to actually do as much. What you need to do is say, this though is really important, or this is higher intent, and we're going to keep optimizing this until this landing page or this blog post or whatever, we're going to keep looking at the metrics of this core topic maybe, and optimize that core topic for traffic. And not just for traffic, but of course, like, traffic is just one of the three growth levers you can push on when it comes to marketing. You know, you've got traffic, then you've got conversions, and then you've got nurturing of the people that are actually in your CRM already, which is where you see things like email marketing being really, really important, that you can reach those people, but still keep them coming back to those web pages that have product, you know, deeper product descriptions, and seeing how they're engaging with your email content through a click instead of just a scroll. So all of that, I think, is like, it's important to think that there's these three growth levers in marketing. Traffic is the first one, but it does drive everything, because if you don't have the traffic, you can't increase your conversion rate, and then you don't have people to nurture. So it is the start of the funnel, if you will. But as it trickles down towards, you know, having these people we can nurture with marketing content to then get towards a closed one deal or an open deal to a closed one deal to retention.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of the things that we're saying in terms of reaching your target audience within all the noise that's out there is tracking, having tools that you can be prospective about and be like, okay, we don't think it's this synonym. What is the synonym that would work? How do we go about doing this? And then how do we put in effort into this and know that that effort won't be scrapped? We just need to actually develop the effort by seeing how it performed and then invest again on optimizing it.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the importance of the location that your traffic is being directed to and how we think about that?
Yeah, totally. As you said, like, getting that traffic is the first step, but what do you do with it once you have it? Because you can just scrap all of the work you just put in trying to get people to come to your site, whether that's through email or socials. In my view, like, the importance of the landing page cannot be overstated. It's not just about leading traffic to the website. It's about leading them to the right page, the right content. And you want that to align with their needs, their expectations, and just like the value that they're looking to get out of spending time on your site. For us, we always make sure that different pages serve different purposes. Someone might be looking for a form to give you their contact information to learn more, or they might be looking for a blog which answers a specific question, or maybe just another page that provides a quick touch point and then they're going to come back later. So you want to have all of those points in the funnel so that somebody, no matter where they are on their buyer's journey, finds what they're looking for from your site. So I think, yeah, that's just a big part of doing something helpful with that traffic that you're managing to generate through marketing.
And I want to jump in there with another definition, because a landing page is not just any website page. Do you want to explain how we differentiate between those two terms, website page versus a landing page?
Sure. I mean, a landing page is more of a touch point, I think, in how we view it. It can be a temporary page. Like if you have a conference event coming up and you want to create a landing page around just that conference, or you can have a permanent landing page that someone can click to from CTA on your site or from an email, et cetera. So we use landing pages so that we can track how people are interacting with the site and where they're going after that.
And landing pages don't necessarily live and often don't live in your main website page navigation system.
Totally, yeah.
And that's a really important distinction too, because if you're talking about, oh my God, page after page after page on a website, gets really cluttery and hard to navigate. And we're big advocates for streamlining that and having web pages that are main pages to help explain the product and even the company brand. And then we have landing pages for initiatives. Sometimes we have stagnant or static landing pages that are evergreen, like you said, and that are always driving funnels. You know, the traditional example of that is the demo page, but I think a webinar or even a trade show upcoming could be like more of an active push. The other category where you're like, hey, we're going to this trade show. We really want to show this trade show that we are very focused on what this audience needs. And we're going to make a page that's dedicated to it, totally focusing on search terms around this audience or this trade show so that we can get some SEO legitimacy around this, but also let that audience know we see them and we get what their goals are. So you can make it very, very custom. So we kind of have those landing pages as separate to website pages. This is a HubSpot language thing in the way that they set it up, but it also means it doesn't clutter your site. They don't have to be there in the main page navigation, but they can still be searchable and indexable by search engines and shareable through social media, through blog posts, through email marketing, all those kinds of ways that you're disseminating your content.
Yeah, and I would also say it's really important, like the way that HubSpot sets it up is so awesome through campaigns, because especially for small businesses, like you're not going to hundreds of conferences a year. You have to figure out which ones are getting you revenue, which ones are getting connections, which ones are actually worth going to. So setting up like your landing pages and your emails all in a campaign in HubSpot and being able to track exactly how much attributed revenue is from that conference or that event can be super important. Well, it's always super important, but it's especially important to small businesses.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that what's so cool about that is that it's very scalable. So it's like, oh, we went to this trade show last year. We can clone it again for this year. We don't want to interfere with last year's results from that campaign and that landing page. So we don't want to just edit it. We actually want to clone it, have a lot of that information the same, but make a new campaign for 2023 or whatever the year is so that you can actually see how this year was different to last year in all the assets. Like maybe we didn't do as many social media posts and that affected how many people came by our booth or how many people booked a meeting on our landing page through that, you know, book a meeting link that we offered. So all of those things can be tracked per campaign, and you can not just see closed won revenue from that, you can also see lead generation from that. So are we going to trade shows for the purpose of lead generation, or are we going, which is a traffic metric, and a conversion metric, or are we going to these trade shows to close business? And sometimes that takes a long time to see, because a lot of the companies we work with have a considered purchase. Almost everybody that we work with has a considered purchase cycle, which means that people don't just see a link and buy it. I think anybody who has less than a $500 product, there's always, even I would even say $100. Like, do you ever buy anything online that's $100 and just go quickly? And even maybe $100, unless you quickly make that decision. But if you're buying a $10,000 product, there's going to be meetings and weeks, and you're going to really consider that purchase. So those various touch points that you can track, all the assets that you've put together to see the closed won revenue and allow it to live online for a long period of time so that those 6 months can pass and that purchase cycle, are really important too.
Mm-hmm.
What's one thing you think marketing and sales teams miss or overlook when it comes to strategies to connect with the right customers?
I mean, I think it's probably just active listening, like listening to what your clients need, and like listening to your sales team, your marketing team. Like, people can get frustrated because they're trying to relay a need that they have, and it's kind of like you're talking to a blank wall. I think always like understanding pain points, challenges, aspirations, considering all of these when you're interacting with your customer, with your client, with your coworkers. These are all just important factors in, you know, being a good human, but also like working well and getting good work done. So,
and I mean, we've talked about repurposing as so important. And I think like there are three marketing efforts in terms of production that you need to think about budgeting time for across every marketing team's work. And that is planning, which would be when you involve the sales team and make sure that you understand your customer or you're doing surveys. So that planning phase is important. And I think that gets overlooked a lot. So often we're like, we're going to this trade show, quick, everybody make this thing, get all that stuff together, publish it. And that's actually the second phase, which is create the content. And the third phase is actually optimize it, which is where we were talking about that repurposing piece as being so important. And those three steps, I think, are things that we tend to miss. Steps one and three, we're great at producing content. Now that we have CMSs, the expectation from the sales team, from your executive team, is that you should be able to make a web page very easily. You should be able to post content fairly easily. And while that may be the case, it doesn't mean that it's always like, if you actually set aside time to plan it, then you can do the SEO research to make it more successful and be like, oh, I should have been using this term instead of the synonym that I had that has really low search volume. And that's why I think SEMrush is so great, is because it allows you to see potential search terms instead of just the one you thought.
Totally. And I think, yeah, we can get ahead of ourselves and be like, oh, I want to educate my potential customers on this aspect of my product or this new thing that we're coming out with. And sometimes the best way to do that is by educating them on something else and then introducing them to it. Like trying to think about, oh, what does my customer need? What does my customer want to learn about, rather than kind of just putting items forward that are important to us and kind of leaving it at that. I think there are lots of methods to go about it that can leave your customers educated with exactly what you want them to know about, but also considering their needs and like what they're ready to hear. So I think that it's a combination of those.
So you want a new website. What could go wrong? Well, the fact is that a website is like all components of marketing. Without testing, everything that you do is just best laid plans. And we all know those don't always work out. At least not the way you intended, all the time. That's why testing is so critical. And having the right software in place to test what it is that you've put on the new website can be the difference between a success and fail, because it's not actually that black and white. Being able to see this worked, but this didn't, and now we have a method to fix it, is mission critical. Also, like most things in marketing, a website serves more than one purpose. It gives you branding so that you can become known and trusted. It can help with traffic. That's where your search engine optimization efforts come in, because when you are able to be found, you can increase your traffic, which then increases your opportunity for conversion. But of course, you need efforts around conversion too, because lead generation doesn't happen without a conversion point. And what I mean by a conversion point is a spot where you can identify the leads. Typically, this is a form field that gets filled in, and that way your software can identify who the person is. And then you also need infrastructure to keep nurturing those leads, because nothing is ever going to be a one and done move in sales anymore, unless you're selling a product that is less than $100. Most of you listening to this podcast aren't. We have long and considered purchasing cycles, which could take 3 to 6 months. More positive touch points means more prepared to buy. So here are some things to put on your wish list to make sure that you get the website that is going to create quality traffic and attract them to you so that you get to connect with a client base that needs you most. Make sure you get a firm in place who can handle the UX and think about an easier layout that will be better and more logical to navigate. Make sure you have a CMS that is going to be easy to manage the site so you can make changes and you're not locked in. Get a CMS that you can also test things with. We recommend HubSpot. because you also get the vital tracking and the ability to A/B test innately. Of course, you need it to be secure and mobile friendly. These are things that you should be able to count on. But tracking and improving what you're doing, you need to only count on by expecting to spend more time human resource-wise with people who are going to be there to analyze it and make those improvements. Because we all know, it's easy in times of economic grief to think about not doing any more marketing, and maybe that's a place where you can save in budget, but we know from experience that after 90 days of no marketing, your pipeline dries up, and that's not something that is sustainable or that you want to endure. Activity equals momentum and leads to breakthrough. Make sure that you have the right activities that you can measure and track to know that they're the right activities going on and the team to support you to get to those goals, who will keep monitoring and looking for ways to improve. We call that growth services at Tangible Words. Find your version of it and make sure that you employ those people to help you long term.
Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pains. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.